Welcome to the Command Line Podcast for January 8th, 2012. I'm your host, Thomas Command Line Gideon, a self-proclaimed hacker, eccentric, and hacktivist. This is my show about the practice and profession of programming, drawing on well over a decade of professional experience and a lifetime spent hacking, the intersection of technology with society and public policy, and anything else clever, elegant, or funny that catches my mind as a diehard technology geek. This episode is a feature cast. In it, I have a new hacker word of the week. I have a bit of listener feedback to get to very briefly, and a new inner chapter fresh for the new year. I'll admit it's a bit rambly, maybe a little diffuse as a consequence of getting back into the swing of writing for the show after taking some time off, but I'll be sharing it regardless. It's about working at all levels, the challenges and benefits of doing so. I hope that you got an appreciable and well-deserved break at the end of last year, as I certainly did. I got a solid week off due to a fun quirk of my current employer. As a not-for-profit, we have a total number of holidays off that's comparable to the federal government. It's very common with not-for-profits, but the way they're observed during the course of the year actually is a lot closer to a private sector outfit, in that we have fewer off. We don't necessarily close the office for all of the federal holidays. The way they reconcile these two is by giving us that week off between Christmas and New Year's every year, which is, I have to say, the first time I observed it. It's kind of cool to have that much time off and also to take time off from the podcast. It was in some ways a little bit draining because I did have family in town and we did the obligatory sort of touristy stuff, and that does exact a certain amount of toll. But on the flip side, it's also quite refreshing, as my mother loves to babysit her only grandchildren. So we actually got opportunities to go out just as a couple, the two of us, which we rarely get to do, even though our boys are a bit older. I still have this feeling at odd moments that I might still like a short, quiet break to still kind of crank back up into the new year. There's a long weekend coming up soon, so maybe I will get my wish. Regardless, I do feel very happy to be back on the mic. I do feel very excited to get back into the swing of things, producing and writing for the show. I have some ideas lined up that I'm going to be exploring, hopefully some more interviews this coming year as with last year. And without further ado, without natting on too long about the behind-the-scenes production here for the podcast, I'm going to go ahead and get into the listener feedback. I only have one piece of feedback, but I love that I could start out the new year sharing something with you. And this was in response to the last newscast, in which I had a security alert talking about an update to the venerable PuTTY. This is a multi-platform, as it turns out, OpenSSH client. And Thomas wrote in to say, I just wanted to point out that PuTTY is available on Debian-based Linux distributions and not, quote, exclusively for Windows, unquote. Love the show. Thanks, Thomas. Thank you for the correction. I hadn't realized that, and I actually went ahead and installed PuTTY on my Ubuntu box. I run Lucid Lynx because of stability of audio drivers. The only reason I'm not up to current on my lab system here that I record on, I did install PuTTY. And if you want a GUI front end for SSH, this is a good option to go with, as it has all of the advantages that I talked about in that newscast. It's small enough to put on a thumb drive. You can run it anywhere. You can run it especially on your relatives' Windows systems if you have to access something securely. The only thing that I seem to have a problem with is, while you could specify an identity file, so you could use key-based authentication, the key agent pageant appears to be missing from at least the Lucid repositories, and I'm not sure how or if you could get PuTTY set up to work with the standard authorization agent that the command line OpenSSH tool uses. But otherwise, I think this is worth looking into if you have experience with it elsewhere, or it sounds attractive to you because of the kind of work that you need to do. Again, I highly recommend that you check this out. And as Thomas pointed out, there's another reason for doing so, that it's not just for Windows. Thanks, as always. If any of the rest of you have any questions, corrections, or comments, you can send those to feedback at thecommandline.net. The hacker word of the week comes from The Jargon File, maintained by Eric Raymond at catb.org. FUBAR. Noun. Very common. Another widely used metasyntactic variable. See foo for etymology. Probably originally propagated through DEC system manuals by Digital Equipment Corporation, DEC, in 1960s and early 1970s. Confirmed sightings there go back to 1972. Hackers do not generally use this to mean FUBAR, reader's note, spelled F-U-B-A-R as opposed to F-O-O-B-A-R as the title of this entry, in either the slang or jargon sense. See also Fred FUBAR. In RFC 1639, FUBAR was made an abbreviation for FTP Operation Over Big Address Records, but this was an obvious backronym. It has been plausibly suggested that FUBAR spread among early computer engineers partly because of FUBAR, that is, the slang or jargon sense, and partly because FUBAR parses in electronics text speak as an inverted foo signal. If a digital signal is active low, so a negative or zero voltage condition represents a 1, then a horizontal bar is commonly placed over the signal label. The inner chapters journal my own quest to improve in the craft of programming. Each chapter reflects on a specific practice or principle through the lens of my own experiences, both as a professional and an enthusiast. The name refers to the Chinese classic of philosophy, the Chuanzi. Divided into two sections, the inner chapters make up the first part, attributed to the philosopher Chuanzi himself. The commentaries on the first section, written by his students and others, are known as the outer chapters. I hope you will contribute to my outer chapters by sharing your own thoughts and experiences on growing as a programmer. If switching careers has taught me anything, it's that the ability to operate at multiple, even all levels, is crucial. You may be wondering what I mean by that. As a technologist, as opposed to a software developer, I rarely can fully anticipate on what I'll be working from day to day. I do have some longer-running projects, but they lack in terms of people. There aren't any large teams with specialized roles at my current employer. On good days, I get to write some code, even if it's just as a modest program or bit of scripting. Other days, I'm writing and communicating based on my technical expertise and experience. There's a dash of public speaking, some community organizing, and a squidge of event planning. Much of the rest of the time, I'm evolving into something of a system administrator and network engineer. Not all of the work is strictly technology-focused, but the value I bring is my deep understanding of many aspects of technology. To be effective at applying what I know to new challenges, I have to be able to understand what is being asked, what is required. Those questions may arise in any of those areas that I mentioned. Being fluent in coding, up to date on tech news, or being able to diagnose an ailing server is not enough alone to get the job done. I have to act as a generalist, but I honestly think it's more than that. The issues and tasks that I tackle often span different areas of my experience and work. Cultivating the ability to operate across several disciplines at once, for me, is working at all levels. Even if you're on a more traditional development team or free, Libre, and open source project, expanding your focus to multiple arenas simultaneously is valuable. I think this ability to bridge produces useful context on each area of concern and certainly eases communication across disciplines on a diverse team. Look around at the folks you know who have strong working relationships, not just with other hackers of the same stripe, but are also comfortable interacting with users, designers, business folks, whoever. These are invariably going to be good examples to observe of working on multiple levels at once to the strengthening of each one. To start with, cultivating the skill of active listening I find helps. Tai Chi is teaching me another lesson here. In fact, it was my teacher urging us to practice our forms at all levels that planted the seed for this inner chapter, for this very essay in my mind. To practice well, you have to start to understand each level on its own, of course. The hands and feet in Tai Chi sketch out the broad movements. The mind employs imagery, things happening as if they're waterfalling or moving through a slow medium to smooth out those movements, introducing subtleties into the gross mechanics. The core generates power and initiates all movement. An entire workout can be spent focusing on only one of these. Doing so has plenty of value on its own. Early on, that's what we do almost exclusively. Our weekly instructions also often take exactly this form of just honing in on a single level to the exclusion of others to really dive deep and understand it. To perform the movements fully and correctly, though, you have to start integrating, understanding how each part actually layers in and fits in with the rest. Subtlety and nuance starts to emerge both in your understanding and then is reflected in your movement. There's a saying in Tai Chi that everything is connected. Generally, it's taken to mean that all the moving parts of your body are, well, literally connected together so that one thing moves, everything else moves. Contemplating that notion further, though, I think that there is a more expansive meaning to it. Even the distinct layers of the art, some of which I've laid out for you, are connected, usually in ways that are not obvious or easy to perceive. The movement of the core and the flexing of the hips informs the timing of the arms and the posture of the shoulders. Describing why this is so is a little difficult to a non-practitioner, so you may have to take this a little bit on faith. Some of it is because of the easier meaning of the saying that the different parts of the body are physically connected, so you can see why a correct movement in one part of the body results in correct timing somewhere else. The harder to grasp part has to do with a synchronicity of intention that some parts of the motion better enable and support other parts when performed correctly. Being more aware of these nuanced connections when you study and practice leads to a state of operating at multiple levels, approaching all of them. The sense of it is related to an intuition I had early on about this kind of awareness. Every student is learning their own unique Tai Chi. No two students' Tai Chi is the same, and they do this by paying attention to the limits and constraints within their own body, because we're all unique. How far any one person can turn their waist or flex their hip depends on the unique limits based on their level of comfort and distinct physiology. Studying different forms, like pushing hands, that's the two-person choreography, and sword form, helps as it provides a diversity of experiences while practicing that same form of listening. In particular, when you advance enough to start playing against a partner, doing the sensing or pushing hands choreography, you have to extend your awareness to the other person to know when they are stuck and if you're actually playing, if you're doing something approaching sparring, and Tai Chi is very soft, so sparring is not like boxing or hard martial arts, but understanding when a push would be most effective to actually unbalance your opponent, to uproot them. I've been finding myself applying this kind of listening outside of Tai Chi. In a conversation where some decision is being made, paying much closer attention to everyone else is often rewarded with insights about what it is they are truly after and how to craft consensus or compromise with which everyone will be much happier. When coding on a particularly difficult problem, becoming passive and still often allows me to see another approach that I might not have originally considered because I was so intent on my first attempt. I was pushing so hard down that original line of attack that I started on. Stepping back, being open to questions and suggestions, whether you agree with them or not, yields more opportunities than when you let your initial assumptions rule you completely. Doing so is a bit different than shifting to consider the big picture, which I think is also valuable, but that's something a little bit different. Taking a strategic view often means setting aside the tactical. You're switching from one level to another completely. Being aware of all levels means trying to hold both in mind at once, and hence some of the difficulties. And even though that may seem like it's an impossibility, kind of like using a one-to-one scale map, I still think it's a very fruitful exercise, that it does stretch our perceptions, it does force us to think a little bit differently. I think we all can easily spot the big assumptions that we get snarled into, the ones that inform, say, Ford versus Chevy arguments that I've talked about before, like why each programmer prefers a particular editor, operating system, or programming language over another. Day in and day out, our work is equally informed by many smaller biases, of which I think we are rarely directly aware. Occasionally zooming out to consider both the myopic and the farsighted, and the interactions between them in particular, may lead to an easier or more fruitful way of accomplishing some professional or programming task. Understanding one of my favorite metaphors in programming, the leaky abstraction, is a good start, but it's only that, a start. The metaphor of encapsulation within programs is ultimately limited. The emphasis is too much on the deep guts of software, typically where an application meets a library or framework. To be truly effective, even at traditional software implementation, requires understanding all interfaces, not just the code-on-code ones that are, in the case of this metaphor, prone to leaking. I've already mentioned the strategic view, which can take the form of a business plan or a project roadmap. The interface between the software and its users is just as important, whether those users are actual end users, technical experts of some kind, or other programmers, doesn't matter as much as the awareness of how those audiences will bring expectations and previous experience to inform what they try and how they react to errors and other unusual behaviors. If you get the chance to observe different kinds of users make use of your code, then you can directly apply active listening, trying to empathize and understand their experiences. If not, making use of experts and tools from the field of interaction design and human factors can make up for the lack of direct listening a little bit. Even just trying to understand these non-coding disciplines may help expose questions and assumptions made deep in the guts of a program that could have subtle and ultimately costly impacts later on. A great deal of software nowadays is hosted and run as a service. In my experience, a group of users, sometimes too easily ignored, are the operations folks responsible for keeping applications running. Simply thinking about manageability will help those supporting your code, even if there are not full administrative interfaces, often there are not, including this level of operation in your thinking will ultimately make building such tools easier when you have time to do so than if you ignore systems management altogether. Requirements analysis, of course, is the classic, the most common example of listening correctly in software development. Done well, it is really all about paying attention to what is being said, as well as trying to divine what is really meant. Requirements gathered in a rush often reveal more about what we as developers think than the genuine problems with which users and stakeholders really need help. For those of us who work with software as a profession or are enthusiasts, I think we all have our favorite anecdotes about some engineer who didn't listen, hurrying to build some impressive and cutting-edge bit of kit that ultimately didn't really improve the circumstances it was supposed to, or even worse, never got used. When you are able to start approaching holding multiple levels in your mind as you operate at once, I think each layer of that, of comprehension, can really benefit by informing the others that are attended to simultaneously. Paying attention in this holistic manner need not be driven solely by problems. Talking about leaks and software abstractions limits thinking about the design and development of our programs to a particular class of problems that may be encountered. That is, problems at, as I said, low level, deep in the code interfaces. There is as much opportunity to use expanded awareness when simply presented with alternatives and the way something can be coded, the way a solution could be developed and delivered. If at the lowest levels of code, those choices appear to be the same, if we have a 6-1 half a dozen of the other situation, then thinking about the dependent higher levels should help suggest externalities that may push some approaches to the fore as being favorable in some other context that maybe, if we're not trying to think on multiple points in the stack at once, we would be otherwise completely ignorant of. I suspect that hackers of a certain level of experience pay attention to their guts about some way forward that may seem more costly in the short term, but about which they are convinced it's ultimately more right. Pulling in knowledge of broader context may help in better quantifying and expressing it beyond some nebulous and hard-to-articulate sense of just being quote-unquote more right. Awareness across multiple levels and the ensuing interactions may change over time as well. This is not something that I think is static, and it's unfortunate when we have this assumption that we only have to visit things in terms of a comprehensive snapshot. It's fluid. It is going to evolve and permute as time marches on. I've said before that the best case is that the code you write actually gets used, prompting questions, support issues filed back to you, and ultimately, on a good day, feature requests. How people use some new bit of software may actually enable changes in the sorts of things that they do, begging further evolution of that very code. A more complete view may better expose such changes by more regularly pulling in the outside viewpoints I've discussed. expanded awareness can be shared back outwards as well. Understanding how non-coders reason about opportunities and tools helps provide at a minimum a vocabulary to more easily interact, but may also allow us to express that very hackish trait of asking, what if, of encouraging creative speculation. As programmers, we're not the only ones who may be too focused. Building bridges for ourselves into other people's perspectives can help them also take steps away from their usual comfort zone, engaging in more wide-ranging creative thought. I've certainly seen programmers do this without first trying to listen and understand. Skipping those not only can be confusing, but also frustrating for everybody involved. When you realize that everyone is talking past each other, that's a pretty strong indication that not everyone is listening as closely as they really should be. By contrast, when a collaboration between folks with varied interests and backgrounds flows more like a jam session, when each person gets the others and offers ideas that genuinely build on what's been suggested before, then I think you can conclude the exercise of listening has really borne fruit. While it's challenging to operate at all levels all the time, looking forward and taking advantage of opportunities to do so is well worth the effort. Like anything worth doing, it should get easier with practice. Greater awareness will lead to more effective use of your existing skills, especially when you find yourself in novel or unexpected situations. You'll take more inputs into account and have more opportunity for making broader and deeper evaluations. You may find surprising sources for inspiration when in need of ideas for new features or solutions. I'm convinced regularly reassessing our assumptions outside of this consideration of working at all levels is generally a good idea. Opening yourself to awareness on more levels invites more input and ultimately increases the odds something will organically prompt such a reevaluation. More importantly, that evaluation will naturally take into account more perspectives than just sitting down with a list of assumptions and reviewing them every so many months mechanically. Further, if considering multiple levels involves conversations and interactions with others, as I think it really should, then you gain additional sources for insight and knowledge to really help you out in that reevaluation and reassessment, rather than just having to brain through it on your own. Having a rich network of contacts informed by their views and ideas is always a useful resource to cultivate, no matter what projects you undertake. These are just some of my thoughts on this notion, as I said, that was put to me in another context about working at all levels and how to try to incorporate that into daily practice, into project work, into creative work. I'm sure that you have your own ideas and questions that are prompted by this same single image. As always, if you'd like to send those in to me, send them via email to feedback@thecommandline.net. I'd be happy to share them with everybody else. Theme music is The Wicked Thoughts of You by Tafubar, remixed by Mo Shang for the album Asian Variations. For more information, visit asianvariations.com. This music used under permissions of a Creative Commons music sharing license. That's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank you for listening, and if you enjoyed the program, please do tell a friend. Or go to the website at thecommandline.net and click on the support link for all the ways you can financially help out with the production of the show. If you have a question, suggestion, or correction, you can send those to feedback@thecommandline.net, or you can post those as a comment up on the website. If you're away from your computer and the internet at the moment, call the listener comment line at area code 240-949-2638. If you need to get in touch with me securely, details of my public key pair can be found at thecommandline.net/gnupg-fingerprints. The next show, which should be out in a week, will be a news program as usual, so until then, don't forget to hack your world. I would like to thank the Internet Archive for media hosting and bandwidth. The views expressed on this program are my own, and where applicable, those of my guests, and in no way reflect those of my employer or anyone else. This show is produced from 100% recycled bits. Except where noted, permission to recycle those further is granted under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 United States license. That means you're free to change this show as much as you like, as long as you don't alter credits and you share your changes under the same license.